fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
The next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. It is a Tuesday. Post-Monday celebration. Greatest day of the entire week, man. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about. Now that Washington, D.C. is back in full throttle here, it is fun to watch the shenanigans, the drama continue. Who needs the Kardashians when you have Washington, D.C. to pay attention to? Definitely kind of interesting. The love triangles continue. And by love triangles, I mean the absolute hatred for one another on each side of the aisle. But it's just as entertaining. I mean, why do you need to watch any type of... what is it, the Fantasy Islands or the Kardashians or any type of the Jersey Shores, when all you have to do is turn on C-SPAN and you get plenty of that excitement and entertainment already as well. Welcome into the program. I am Andy Hoosier. This is The Voice of Reason, broadcasting out of the heart of the nation here in Wichita, Kansas, on our flagship radio station, the Big Talker KQAM in Wichita. But we are also all over the place, multiple radio stations across the country, and TV and live streaming and podcasting. However you watch or listen to us, it's so wonderful to have you along for the ride as usual. Bottom of this hour, Brian Festa. He's with We the Patriots USA. We've had him on before. Great conversation that we've had with him in the past, mostly about Second Amendment issues. But right now he's in the middle of a lawsuit battling the COVID-19 vaccination that's mandatory for children in the public school system. And where he's at on some of these lawsuits and what this could mean, not only for the lawsuit that he's dealing with right now, but also what that could have as a repercussion in a positive fashion across the ripple waves in the legal system to set the precedent for potential lawsuits moving forward like this if he ends up getting a positive ruling. So we'll cover that here and more at the bottom of the hour with him. It's a long interview. So here's the thing. We recorded it and it was like 25 minutes long. So we're going to play a couple segments of it on the show, and then we will also upload the entire unedited, completely extended long cut form of the interview on the podcast after the show today, so you can listen to the entire thing, because there's, even with playing it for two segments, there's not going to be enough for you to hear the entire content and conversation. So highly recommend you check that out. We'll upload some of that after the show later on today. In the news today, what the heck's going on in the world today?
What's trending today?
So yesterday, obviously, we still survived. We had some fun with it was an interesting show yesterday for sure. We had a conversation about the solar eclipse and some of the meanings of it, the biblical meanings, the paranoid conspiracy theory meanings, and had some fun with the solar eclipse. We're still here, as far as I'm aware. Is this thing on? Are we still? Okay, I think we're still tangible. We're still here. So everything's all good. We'll continue to move on as if that didn't happen until the next one that happens like 20 years from now. So, or what is it, 20 years, 40 years? We're in 2040. We're in 2024. I think 2044 is when the next one's going to happen. So we have 20 years that we can wait until the end of the world prophecies begin again. So we'll see. However, there was apparently a campaign happening down in Texas yesterday where Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee was speaking to, I believe, some students. I don't know if it's like a prep for like a graduation thing. I don't know if it was for a solar eclipse thing. I don't quite know exactly what the speech was for, but I think she's our new Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
I am told This is a garbage disposal.
Now, for those that don't know who Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee is, she is the one that shows up to Congress in Washington, D.C. with the bedazzled cowboy hat and boots. Oh, yes. She thinks she's some kind of cowgirl by just from being from Texas. Being from the city of Texas, but being from Texas nonetheless, and she shows up with like the cowgirl hat and the boots, and they're all bedazzled and sparkly and shiny, the rhinestone cowboy to its perfection, and she's kind of a nutso progressive left-wing nut job. And yesterday, speaking about the solar eclipse, she said this.
And sometimes you've heard the word full moon. Sometimes you need to take the opportunity just to come out and see a full moon is that complete rounded circle. Made up mostly of gases. And that's why the question is why or how could we as humans live on the moon? Are the gases such that we could do that? The sun is a mighty powerful heat that is almost impossible to go near the sun. The moon is more manageable. And you will see in a moment, or not a moment, you'll see in a couple of years that NASA is going back to the moon.
Wow. So
I'm special.
No, let's not be mean here. No, I don't know if she's speaking to elementary students. I would assume with the mannerism there that she's speaking to some form of elementary student, because let's just recap what we heard here. I've heard some fun conspiracy theories yesterday about the end of the world and about flat Earth. Apparently that the solar eclipse is proof positive of flat Earth, which my wife gets. She laughs at me. She's like, Andy, that gets you fired up more than anything else. We sat there and watched videos last night on social media, on TikTok and Instagram and YouTube, these short videos, people trying to explain flat Earth to me. And if you retake a basic fifth grade science class, it disproves everything they're talking about with how stupid these people are. But nonetheless, there's people that believe it. So I don't know if she falls into this category, but she seems like she's speaking to elementary school students, because if you didn't catch it, let's just play this one more time and break it down for you real briefly here.
And sometimes you've heard the word full moon.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you need to take the opportunity just to come out and see a full moon is that complete rounded circle.
Oh, yeah.
Which is made up mostly of gases.
No, the moon does not have any gas. I'm sorry. As far as we're aware, and the fact that we have been on the moon, there's no gas on the moon. It is fully rounded, though. Well done. I mean, you know what a full moon is when it's completely rounded. So, again, I think she's talking to 12-year-olds or younger. Actually, my daughter, who's 9, knows what a full moon looks like, and it's completely rounded. So it's got to be maybe 3-year-olds, maybe, that she's campaigning to. I'm not quite sure. Not the typical voter demographic that you're going for. But, hey, if that's what you want to do, all the power to you. But, no, the moon doesn't have any gas.
And that's why the question is why or how could we as humans live on the moon? Are the gases such that we could do that?
Oh, Mars would be the answer you're looking for. Mars. She would be really bad at some type of game show where you would be like, what's the next possible thing in outer space that we could actually live on as humans? Mars would be that answer. Not the moon, but Mars. Thank you very much for that. There you go. Sheila Jackson Lee. She's a congresswoman just like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and she's now made an AOC statement. The Democrat Party continues to show their true colors of exactly who they are and how ridiculous they actually are. All right, let's get into what's trending here. What do you say?
What's going on in this world of mine? There's a whole lot of killing in this world of mine. Somebody's got to help this world of mine.
Let's go up to Washington, D.C. for a minute here, shall we? As Congress back in action, obviously, since yesterday, really getting under heat today. They were traveling yesterday, and they're back up. Now, priority number one, as we talked about, what's the focus point and the focal for the elected officials? That would be Ukrainian funding. On how much money we're going to send over there. And more Republicans now, surprisingly, are coming out making the statement of, well, we kind of have to. We kind of need to do something. They're an ally. We got to support them. We're going to do our thing. And as I mentioned yesterday, that while I'm not against Ukrainian funding and supporting our ally, we also need to stand true to what Republicans promised that we would do, which would be immigration. And while that may have fallen through in January, February, that doesn't mean that we just throw in the towel and that we're done. That you would think that we would actually continue to fight, that we would find another way, that we would try to negotiate a little bit better. We just passed a federal budget for the first time since the Obama administration. Now it took us 6 months into the fiscal year, but by golly, we passed a federal budget with 12 appropriation bills broken up into two different segments, along with whatever funding that we have just sitting around for, you know, Ukrainian funding or foreign policy or whatever else we're doing. But we passed a federal budget, so we should applaud ourselves for that, right? So, I mean, we should be happy. It was it was an atrocious bill. It was a ridiculous amount of spending, but it was a federal budget nonetheless. So we did something, and it took a lot of work, and it took a lot of frustration, and it took a lot of banter, and it took a lot of fighting and bickering amongst each political party. But we did it, and we should be proud of that. And now we're coming back, we're going into Ukrainian funding, which they say is what we have to do or else we're all going to perish. And which the Ukraine will fall and Russia will topple them, which imagine how stable that nation must be if the only way they can survive it is if we front the entire war for them, essentially. No other nation, not NATO, not the European Union, not anybody, only the United States. And if we don't fund them, then they will perish. And that Russia will gain control and the communists win with Vladimir Putin, because only solely the United States refused to actually step in and do something about it. That shows the instability of that country in itself, and that should be a deeper, bigger problem for us. But setting that aside for a moment, Republicans made a promise, and Republicans made that promise of the fact that we are going to help Ukraine as long as we start addressing issues on our borders as well, or our issues here on the home front, because we're not wanting to be isolationists, but we are wanting to at least focus a little bit more attention on the home front before we start expanding our wings and flying elsewhere. Which would be a commonsensical thing to do, right? I would think so, at least. So we haven't passed immigration. Why are we trying to push the Ukrainian funding until we've actually done what we've proven and promised that we would do, that Mike Johnson, our Speaker of the House, promised that he would do? Now, there are the hardliners that say no Ukrainian support whatsoever at all, including Marjorie Taylor Greene, which is back in the news today, according to TheHill.com, that MTG drama builds with the embattled Speaker Mike Johnson. Now, before we get into the details of what she said, I want to step back just for a moment. Take that 30,000-foot view here and just step back, just disconnect from the emotion of the situation and being headfirst into this, and just step back and just observe for a moment, shall we? We have a one-vote majority in the House of Representatives, which is a very narrow margin after Mike Gallagher from the state of Wisconsin ended up wanting to vacate early on before the actual end of his term and not run for re-election, but actually just step away, making things even more difficult and essentially making the Republican Party irrelevant in the House of Representatives, because we always had that handful that loved to vote with Democrats. So again, thank you, Mike Gallagher, even though we like to tell you farewell. You've shown your true colors as well here in the nation on what your priorities actually are. But nonetheless, we have a one-vote majority, and we have an embattled Republican Party. So the deeper question that we need to look at here is, where is the line on agenda versus principles for the conservatives? Because we need, and I'm the first to tell you, I'm a big fan of Marjorie Taylor Greene. I love what she does. I love the fight that she has. I absolutely respect what she's doing, and I understand exactly what she's doing. The motion to vacate Mike Johnson, however, I don't know necessarily serves in favor of us, because can you honestly say that we're going to get a conservative, more conservative speaker than Mike Johnson? Now, Mike Johnson, I like as well. He's been a good conservative. He also tries to play both sides in order to get something done and be that middle of the road guy, even though historically his voting record shows that he's been predominantly a strong conservative vote for the Republican Party. So he's trying to be a productive speaker, but he's trying to play too many crowds right now just to appease them. And you know what happens when you say that you try to appease everybody? You end up appeasing nobody. And the foundation of what he is a conservative Republican, the conservative group within the Republican Party now getting upset with Mike Johnson because he's trying to advocate for this Ukrainian funding. Marjorie Taylor Greene putting up the motion to vacate and going off on the haywire going after Mike Johnson. I have to ask you two questions that you need to ponder right now. Is this healthy for the Republican Party right now because we're standing on principle and that we're not going to take any crap, we're not going to cower, we're not going to cave, we're not going to compromise with the Democrats that want to just push their agenda? Is that the step, which I'm totally okay with? Or is this looking and showing weakness of the Republican Party as we go into an election season, that we're still a non-unified party, that we kind of need to show and express some sort of unity going into an election year? It's a tough position for Republicans to be in right now. We'll continue some more of this when we come back right around the corner. The battle and the drama in Washington, D.C. continues. Stay right there.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. Welcome back into it. Trying to therapy you on a daily basis. It's your political therapist here on the Voice of Reason. So great to have you with us. So we have the drama in Washington, D.C. Marjorie Taylor Greene versus Speaker Mike Johnson. The motion to vacate again. Now, let's be completely honest. Just like we got lucky. We got really lucky when Mike Johnson became Speaker of the House. And we had to go deep into the pockets of the Republican ranks, which is a good thing. And I was so happy to see how it turned out, because I said all the way back then, I agreed with needing to oust Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy was a hack rhino Republican. He was a wishy-washy guy. He was a Republican from California. He wasn't a conservative. He was compromising on everything. And I completely agreed that we needed to get rid of him and have a more conservative person. My concern at that time was that we would not have enough votes to have a better, more conservative speaker coming in. And we got lucky with Mike Johnson. Everybody rallied around him. He was a firebrand to his own degree. He kind of did his own thing. He was a solid conservative. And we're like, hey, now we can get things done. And we started to. And you know what? His plan, and you got to give the guy credit, his plan to break up the 12 appropriation bills and put them in two separate voting packages to vote on after passing them individually through the committees and getting them to the House floor, it worked. Now, they weren't necessarily the best bills, but at the same time, it's the first time that we've had a federal budget passed since before the Barack Obama administration. So that's saying something. We actually have a federal budget in place. It's not the best. It's nowhere near even good. But at the same time, it's something. We're moving in the right direction. We've now seen the boat turn, however you gauge boats turning in the water, the nautical whatever. Nonetheless, we're starting to see the ship turn just slightly, which is good news. Now the question is, can we keep that momentum going? The conservatives have to unite, but the bickering is almost, and I say this as the guy who likes to get along with everybody, the happy-go-lucky kind of guy, which probably isn't good for politics, but that's the kind of guy I am, that I think that the bickering is almost somewhat of a good thing if it's within control. Because the conservatives see that the conservatives are fighting, that we're not backing down, that we're not cowering, that we're standing on principle, and that we're going to fulfill our promises. So God bless Marjorie Taylor Greene and what she's doing. There's a need for that. There's always that fringe in society, you know, the ones that always have to question everything, always have to challenge everything, that always have to make an annoyance because they always have to just question everything that you're doing. And while as annoying as that is, we have to admit that in society that there's a need for that, and we always want that to be there. We can never always unify and agree on everything because then we don't see the possibilities that could happen without us actually understanding them. So you always need those outliers. And there's always going to be those outliers. We will never be in unison on anything, everything, and all the time. It's never going to happen. So the Republican Party is no different. And God bless the wide umbrella that we have as a Republican Party to allow us to think for ourselves. And Marjorie Taylor Greene does a great job of that. My concern is, again, if we try to oust Speaker Johnson, who's going to replace him? And what does that look like going into election season? It emboldens the conservatives, with conservatives are finally saying, I've had enough, we're done, we're not going to tolerate this anymore, which is a good thing. But the question is, will we oust Speaker Johnson? And if we do, will we see stagnation going into election time, which isn't necessarily a bad thing for stagnation? But that also means that Democrats have the opportunity to squeak in and pass a whole bunch of their agenda without Republicans being unified. Because remember, we're down to one vote in the House of Representatives. We have a one-vote majority, and all the Republicans need to be on board. So we have to find a way to bring the rest of the Republicans slightly back to the right instead of trying to just compromise with Democrats, which is going to be more than likely what happens with 5 or 10 or 15 of these House Republicans, to allow a Democrat agenda for them to try and ram through as much as possible, because they're coming to the admittance. They're actually recognizing reality right now that they are far behind in the polls nationally, that Joe Biden's probably not going to win re-election, that they're not going to have their agenda done, and they don't care about pissing people off. They're going to do it to try and actually cram as much of their agenda in as possible before they lose, so that way they can just be a stagnation for the next couple of years until they get a majority again. That's their agenda. And that's a frustrating agenda, but that's their agenda nonetheless. Brian Festa coming up on the program right around the corner. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When Reason Meets Radio, this is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Welcome back into the program. So great to have you along for the ride as usual. Really happy to have this guest back on the show. It's been a little bit since we've chatted with him. And I got to say, it's wild that we're still having to battle some of the fights that we do on a daily basis, even after, and I know we have a short-term memory in politics some of the time, but we're still battling some of the post-COVID-19 fights. And if you remember all the shenanigans that went on through there, now we get to try and continue to fight for this, because are they going to try it all over again? But when it comes to vaccines and mandates and telling you what to do in order to, I don't know, function in society, it's kind of an odd conversation to have. But we're here, and that's what we have to do, and excited to have on the program with us. He is the vice president and co-founder of the We the Patriots USA organization, which you can find on WePatriotsUSA.org. Excited to have back on the program Mr. Brian Festa. Brian, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Andy. How are you?
Yeah. So good to talk with you. Last time we chatted, we talked about some Second Amendment issues, which obviously those never go away. They always find unique and interesting ways to go after the Second Amendment. But COVID-19 really drove some issues home for people. And while they tried to scare us into abiding by it, there was a small fringe it started off with, and then it grew to a very large portion of the population that started to question some of the mandates and rules that were being put in place, including saying that in order for you to like walk back out your front door and actually go back to work and function in society, you were forced to get vaccines or to go to school, that you had to get these vaccines, which I found kind of odd, and so many others as well. You've been on the forefront with this, challenging it in the court system about having religious exemptions for vaccinations, especially for school children. Talk about what you've been working on here.
So, yeah, in 2021, so April of 21, the state of Connecticut officially repealed their religious exemption to mandatory vaccinations for school children. That's an exemption that had been in place since 1959, when the mandatory vaccination law was first enacted in the state of Connecticut, as they have in every state. There's mandatory vaccinations for school attendance in all 50 states. And Connecticut had had a religious exemption, though, since 1959. But in April of 21, riding the wave of COVID hysteria, the legislators, who had been trying to repeal this for years before, were successful in finally getting it repealed. Governor Lamont signed the repeal bill into law on April 28, 2021. That day, within about 3 hours of him signing that, we stood on the steps of the Connecticut Supreme Court and vowed that we would file a federal lawsuit against the governor and the state, and that we were going to go all the way to the Supreme Court, if necessary, to restore religious freedom for these families. We have kept that promise. We filed a cert petition to the United States Supreme Court on December 11th of last year. And on February 5th, something really extraordinary happened. The state of Connecticut, in a typical move, very common legal strategy when a cert petition is filed, had waived its right to respond to our petition. That's something they do sort of as legal strategy to dig into the court. Hey, this is frivolous. Don't waste your time with it. We're not even going to bother responding to it. And that's a strategy to try to get the court to ignore it. But what happened on February 5th, the United States Supreme Court ordered the state of Connecticut to respond to our petition, which means that at least one justice up there is looking at this very carefully and is interested in the case and wants the state to respond. That is very significant because it doesn't happen often. As I said, it's pretty rare.
Yeah.
And out of the 8,000 or so petitions, between 7,000 and 8,000 petitions are filed every year to the court, they take probably 80 of them. So about 1% on average.
Wow.
They grant. So the fact that most petitions that you don't even hear anything about, they don't respond, they don't issue any statement, they don't even vote on most of the petitions that are filed. But the fact that they're looking closely enough at this case to order the state to respond to our petition increases the likelihood of us getting cert granted. It's not a guarantee, of course, but it does increase the likelihood because they're looking at this very carefully. Now, what's the significance of this? Well, the significance is there's a case called Employment Division v. Smith, which was from 1990, which basically said that when it comes to religious accommodations, religious exemptions, the state does not have to honor them. As long as the state can ban something, can prohibit a practice, or even mandate something, as long as the law that they're enacting is neutral and generally applicable. So that case involved Native Americans who wanted to use peyote. They were fired from the jobs for using peyote as part of their religious ceremony practices, and they were denied unemployment benefits. And the state said, well, that's willful misconduct. You were using drugs. That was an identifiable reason to fire you. And the Supreme Court, in a decision that many legal scholars over the years, including some of the current justices on the Supreme Court, have criticized, widely criticized, the Supreme Court in that case said that as long as it's a neutral law, as long as you're not specifically enacting a law that says only Native Americans who who want to use this in religious practices are banned from using peyote, then it's okay. You can have a general statewide ban for all citizens on using drugs. Sounds logical enough, except that in this case, state of Connecticut, repealing religious exemptions, what they've essentially done is denied a fundamental right to an education, because in the Connecticut Constitution, education, public education, is a fundamental right. So they've taken this fundamental right and said that only people who do not have religious beliefs objecting to vaccination can attend school. And if you have a secular reason for objecting, that's okay. If you have a medical reason, in other words, if you have a medical exemption for vaccination, that's okay.
Right.
You can still attend school. But if you have a religious belief against it, no, you're going to be denied your fundamental right. That sounds an awful lot like discrimination, and it certainly does not sound like a neutral law of general applicability. And so this is why we're taking aim at Employment Division v. Smith. At least three justices have signaled a desire to overturn Smith in the case called Fulton versus City of Philadelphia in 2022, very recent. So we think we've got a really good shot at this, and this would have applications beyond the school children context, even in the employment context, because obviously that Employment Division v. Smith case that I mentioned was an employment case,
sure,
not a school case. So if they overturn that or redefine that, that's going to give great latitude for people to be able to claim religious exemptions in the workplace from any kind of mandate, whether you're talking about vaccines or masks, testing, any kind of protocol they may inflict on us in the future. This is a landmark case. If we get this granted, this will be the probably the biggest case in the last 50 years in the history of health freedom and religious freedom.
Yeah, there's a lot to break down because there's a lot on the table here. So, but you're right, this is a major lawsuit that could really affect the health freedom movement here in the nation, which is a good thing when we could potentially see, you know, disease X that could be coming out soon and trying to lock things down all over again. Which is interesting. You mentioned that in the state of Connecticut, are they allowed to deny or turn away or decide not to actually get the vaccine based on some type of secular or personal belief, and they didn't want to, and they could still go to school? Because a lot of states didn't even allow that. You had to get it, whether it was a religious or just a personal decision altogether.
They're allowed to refuse for medical reasons. So that's, when I say secular, it's not personal belief. We don't have a personal belief exception anymore in Connecticut, but
okay,
they do. We never did, really. It was always just religious or medical.
Gotcha.
But the fact that they left the medical exemption in place is proof that it's not a neutral law of general applicability. And Judge Joseph Bianco of the Second Circuit said as much in his dissent. He dissented. We lost at the Second Circuit, but it was a 2-1 decision. It was a three-judge panel.
Yeah.
Judge Joseph Bianco ruled in favor of us and said he did not agree with the majority's opinion to dismiss our case, and felt that it was not a neutral law of general applicability because Connecticut left the medical exemptions in place. So clearly there was hostility to religion, people with religious beliefs. And, you know, we recognized that early on. We said that from the beginning. Also, even if we get to the strict scrutiny analysis, the reason they're doing this, Andy, is Employment Division v. Smith provides a shield for getting to strict scrutiny. What's strict scrutiny? Well, there's strict scrutiny analysis when there's a fundamental right in the Constitution, like your right to free speech or your free exercise of religion in this case.
Yeah.
The government usually has to prove that they had a compelling state interest that justified their action, and that they did this by the least restrictive means. So whatever right they're infringing upon, they've done it by the least restrictive means possible. They wouldn't be able to. They know the reason they're using Employment Division v. Smith as a shield is they know that if we get to that strict scrutiny analysis, they're going to lose slam dunk for us.
Sure.
Because, you know, there was no public health emergency with regard to any of the vaccinations that they were mandating and taking away the exemption for. COVID wasn't even listed as a mandatory exemption, still isn't in the state of Connecticut, as a mandatory vaccination, excuse me, for school. They were doing this because of MMR, because they were worried about measles. There were no measles out there. So there was no compelling interest, and they didn't do it by the least restrictive means because there were more students that were using that were simply non-compliant. They're called the McKinney-Vento students. There's a data, you know, homeless families and other. There's a whole metric that's used, but basically anyone that doesn't provide proof of vaccination is considered non-compliant. They're not using a religious exemption. They're just not compliant, and there were actually more students that were non-compliant in the state than were using religious exemption. But did they do anything to address those students? No. Instead, who did they target? Religious people, people of faith.
That's Brian Festa with We the Patriots USA, which you can find their website and everything that they're doing, a nonprofit legal organization fighting for conservative values. We have part two of that interview coming up right around the corner. We got to take a break here, but fascinating stuff for sure. And the ramifications or the impact that it'll have on the entire nation, if the Supreme Court takes this one up and if they continue moving forward and win this case, this could really set it. If we see disease X, if we see the government try to do what they did during COVID again, then maybe if we have a couple lawsuits under our belts that protect us and stop it from happening again, we could see a different outcome. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah, we'll do some more of that when we come back right around the corner. It is a post-Monday celebration here on The Voice of Reason. Lots more to get to. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
John Wright, it is. Welcome back into it. Last couple of minutes here off the show for a post-Monday celebration. We continue our conversation with Brian Festa from We the Patriots USA. Again, this interview going a lot longer than what we can air here, but we'll air what we can because it's some fascinating content. Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't the military reverse that policy as well? They got a lot of scrutiny with individuals in the military that chose religiously not to actually get the vaccine as well, and it took them a while, but they did reverse that policy on the military side. So that would go in your favor as well, that yes, it's a scrutiny against specifically religious individuals that don't believe in getting this vaccine or any of the vaccines because of a religious meaning, and them cracking down saying, no, we don't really care about what your beliefs are. You still have to get this.
Yeah. Yeah. For the Department of Defense case, you're right. There's a lot of people that unfortunately lost their jobs, were discharged from the military. We actually had a military case, Sergeant Jesus Cano out of New Mexico, was a 21-year, you know, Army sergeant, combat veteran, and lost his GI benefits, was in danger of losing them. Luckily, we were able to fight for him, and he was able to stay in the military and kept it. But they were going to take away his GI Bill benefits that he used to put his kids through school, two of his kids.
Yeah.
This guy served in 9/11, and they were going to take away his rights and his benefits simply because he didn't want to take a toxic shot that was experimental, that have been not been proven safe or effective, and he wanted to have autonomy of his body and hold fast to his religious beliefs, and they were going to discharge him from the military. So, yeah, now that the tide has turned on that, that is helpful. I do personally think, I can't speak for the justices in the Supreme Court, but my personal feeling, watching closely the decisions they've issued recently, I haven't agreed with all of them, and we haven't gotten victories everywhere.
Sure.
But when it comes to religious liberty in particular, they've been very favorable to plaintiffs claiming religious liberty, and very, very critical of states, any government, whether it's the federal government or the state government, that infringes on one's religious freedom. So I think that bodes very well for us. And like I said, the implications of this case cannot be overstated. This is going to reach far beyond a schoolhouse in Connecticut.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, amen to that. We're talking with Brian Festa. He's the vice president and co-founder of We the Patriots at USA, which you can find online at wethepatriotsusa.org. That's what I wanted to ask you next was, let's say, and hopefully you guys get the proper ruling in this, the state responds, you go to court, and you get the favorable reading and decision from the court. Talk about the implications of this, not just of the school there in Connecticut, but talk about the wide implications that this would have nationwide on future pandemics or future laws regarding vaccines and freedom of choice and freedom of religious expression with individuals both in a school and at work and in general public. I mean, this could really change the dynamic of how we view what we have to do to function in society.
Absolutely. So starting with schools, it's beyond Connecticut. California lost their religious exemption, their personal belief exemption. They actually had a personal belief exemption in 2015. New York lost theirs in 2019. Maine lost theirs in 2021. We lost ours in 2021. So all of, and West Virginia has never had one, and the governor there just vetoed a bill the other day trying to establish a religious exemption. The legislature wanted to pass that, and he vetoed it. So West Virginia also doesn't have one. All those states would be able to win back their religious exemptions if we win this case for school children. That's huge. That is huge. I mean, California obviously has the largest population. There's millions of people there that would like to use a religious exemption that haven't been able to since 2015. This case could restore that for them. Beyond that, in the workplace, yes. Yes, we have something called Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prohibits religious discrimination in the workplace. But as you saw, many employers just ran roughshod over that, ignored it, and still fired people during the pandemic simply because they refused a vaccination, even if they weren't even working in healthcare or any kind of high-risk situation. You know, I'm not saying it was justified in hospital settings, but at least they could make an argument with sort of a straight face in front of a judge that this is high risk because we have a lot of sick people. But you're working in some office here pushing papers in your cubicle. And you're really going to tell me you're going to force a needle into somebody's arm? I mean, there was just no justification. And some people working outdoors by themselves even, or truck drivers. I mean, come on. They were no risk to the public. And so they ignored Title VII. But if we get this ruling, this would be the Supreme Court of the United States saying, no, it also violates the Constitution for you to deny someone's religious freedom. And then any public employer, any government employer, any state employer, any local municipal employer would be bound by the Supreme Court case that you must honor one's religious beliefs when it comes, whenever you're thinking of enacting any kind of mandate. Again, we're not even just talking about vaccinations, Andy. Yeah. We're talking about masks. We're talking about testing. We're talking about any other kind of drug or shot that they might try to impose on people in the future. And make no mistake, this is an election year. When did this nonsense all happen last time? 2020, an election year.
Ryan Festa, We the Patriots USA. Great conversation. We'll have more of that on the podcast for the extended. Until then, we're out of time, my friends. We'll see you back on the radio tomorrow. This is The Voice of Reason. Bye.